And welcome to Thrift Shop Biography. This is the one about Jeanette McCurdy. Thank you for listening. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
You took me by surprise then for some reason.
I'm right here.
Oh, yeah.
Are you all right?
I'm all right, yes. Yeah. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. Because this week I've been reading the autobiography of Jeanette McCurdy called I'm Glad My Mum Died.
Yeah, a few people recommended this to us.
Well, this was a bigger surprise to me because I think this is the first time we've done someone that neither of us really know.
Oh, I couldn't remember whether you'd heard of her or not.
Well, I'd only heard of her because of this book.
Yeah, because it's a best-selling book, obviously.
Yeah, I just saw it flashing up on social media a lot like last year or maybe even the year before last. I know it was the biggest selling autobiography in America that year. And I just happened to see her on a late night chat show in America. And she totally charmed me.
Right.
I thought she was so funny and so articulate. And I thought, wow, I'd love to read that book. But of course, then coming back to England, where the book is relatively unknown, she's certainly unknown. Children might know her.
I'd never, ever heard of her.
And then I was in the charity shop, thrift shop, as we do, looking for books, and I saw it on the shelf, and it puzzled me that it would be in England. So I think I put it on our Facebook group and said, oh, hey, has anybody heard of this? And people saying, yeah, no, read it. You must read it. And then we were still debating it because neither of us had really heard about it. And my next trip to the charity shop, there it was again.
Yes.
So we had two copies. So it's like, okay, we need to read it.
Yeah.
And we did.
And I'm enlightened. This is a very interesting angle.
Yeah.
And something we sometimes touch on, but this is a really, it really goes in depth into one particular aspect of show business, doesn't it?
Which
is child stars and their mothers.
We've always known that a lot of child stars don't fare very well, certainly in adult life, but we've never really had a kind of blow-by-blow account of what's ever really happened to a particular, not from the person themselves, because half of them are dead.
And it'll be, and it'll be different for different people, because some of those kids might have wanted it, it's just in this particular case, they didn't.
Do they ever
do you
really
think,
want
do you think
it?
Some kids might think they do. She knew she didn't.
Yeah, okay.
But I have to say that when we started reading this, I didn't even know what it was about. I didn't even know she was a child. I knew absolutely nothing at all about it.
Apart from that her mum was dead.
And she was glad. Yeah, I didn't know why. I didn't know. Yeah.
So we have nothing else to say about usually.
I hadn't Googled her. I didn't even know she was an actor. I didn't know anything.
Right, okay. Because normally at the beginning we say if we were a fan of the person, the fact is neither of us really knew about it. So we should just get straight into it.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeanette McCurdy. It's a funny name, isn't
it? That's a funny Scottish name. Or
it's not even spelled properly. Actually, what was sad is she said the year that her dad finally gave her a birthday card, he spelled her name wrong.
Yeah, right.
I really felt for her, actually. I thought that was...
And then she heard her mum say, did you get the card like I made you?
Oh.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, this poor girl.
Anyway, she was born in 1992.
Is she the youngest person we've covered? Jamie Lynn Spears?
Jamie Lynn was quite young.
Yeah, but she's certainly young.
She's not as young as you think. To me, that sounds like yesterday, but it isn't.
Oh, we're in 2000. We're way into the 20,000s now, aren't we?
Yeah.
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 She's positively geriatric.
She's very small. She's 5'1".
Her mum was even smaller, 4'11".
Did she look that up as well?
No, it's in the book.
But her height wasn't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I thought, I wonder if she's about as small as her mum. She is. Nearly. Okay, I think it's significant her mum was only 4'9".
Nine?
What was he, 4'11"?
She's getting smaller.
Yes. But isn't that it causes problems, but it sometimes drives people to
shout louder.
To shout louder and want to be seen, heard, all that stuff. She's also very beautiful, her mum.
Yeah, did you Google? Because there's no pictures
really
in this book.
Gorgeous, no.
I do wonder why, because we've read 80 books at this point, the vast majority of them have photos of the people all through their lives. So it's strange to me when somebody writes their autobiography and they don't put any pictures in. Jeanette McCurdy hasn't and Sharon Stone didn't.
Yes, because I think they're writing a novel. They're writing a tale. They're a story. And it's not an autobiography, almost. It happens to be about their life. Do you know what I mean? But it's actually an important book. It's a novel.
Okay, I have a different theory.
Yes.
I thought Sharon Stone didn't put any pictures in the book because she's absolutely beautiful and she's fed up of being judged as beautiful.
Oh, yeah, you did say that.
So she didn't want the pictures to devalue the insides of her brain which are in the pages.
Oh, that could be the same here.
And I think Jeanette McCurdy, a lot of her problems
of being famous... Yes,
it's to do with image.
Oh, that's a very good
call. And I think because of that, she doesn't want any pictures in this book.
Yep, I agree with you.
It could be totally wrong.
Well, it works like that because I didn't Google her until I'd finished it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't know what she looked like, didn't know what her mum looked like.
Well, apart from the front cover of the book.
Yeah, apart from that, which actually was quite a false picture. It could have been anyone. It was very stylized.
Yeah, okay.
So I didn't know what she really looked like. Mm-hmm. I didn't imagine her from the front cover when I was reading it. Anyway.
So she's got brothers, by the way. It's not just her. She's got three brothers, Marcus, Dustin and Scott. And they're all older, aren't they?
Mm.
And she's little Jeanette. And they are quite family-oriented. They don't have a lot, but the three boys, mum and dad, live, obviously, in a house together. But the grandparents are quite present as well, aren't they?
Yeah, and they end up moving in when she's two, and her mum's diagnosed with cancer. They're in Garden Grove, California.
It's nice in California, isn't it?
Nice and sunny.
I just think because we're in rainy London every day.
Yeah.
I just always think it must be so nice to be in California.
You have to drive everywhere there by all accounts. I might be able to walk and get a train. I wouldn't switch that for sunshine. I hate the fact you have to drive everywhere. It's awful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
I haven't sorted that out. Yeah, the grandparents moved in when her mother was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer when Jeanette was 2.
So her mum died when Jeanette was 21. So to have stage 4 cancer and actually to survive for almost 20 years after that day, that's remarkable,
yes,
really.
Yes, it is. You can just pull through.
She's young.
She was young. She was only 34. Well, she did pull through.
She did.
That's what she had, so... Mm.
Yeah. So do you think... Right, we're about to talk about some very questionable behaviour. I wonder if it's a reaction to being a mother of 4 children and being diagnosed with stage 4 cancer at the age of 34, or whether she was also mentally ill and had a personality disorder before that.
Let's find out. Let's just go through it and then have a think at the end, because that's what happened to me. I read the whole thing. Then I thought about it about 3 days later. I went, oh, I think I get it.
So when Jeanette, she kind of talks a lot about her mum. What would you call her mum? A bully? Or because it's not just Jeanette, is it? She seems to be awful to dad as well.
Very controlling. That hyper controlling thing. And her brother.
This controlling thing where her mother does use her cancer a lot.
Yes.
To get her own way, either with her family or with casting directors, with the woman who runs a dance class. She's always putting on a guilt trip about having cancer. Well, so she's using it.
There you go. I actually don't think she's properly sane. It's not the cancer, it was her. She isn't really a sane woman.
Also, there was a video. They would make home videos. And the home video they made when she learned of her cancer diagnosis, they watch it every Sunday as a family.
Once a week.
The mother gathers them all, sits them down, and they watch this video every single week.
Where she's basically saying, goodbye, I'm not going to be there for you. I love you. I don't know. It's like one of those sort of parting videos, I'm guessing. And 2-year-old Jeanette is singing, absolutely oblivious, and she mentions it every week. Oh, look at you, you don't care. So this guilt is heaped on her. She's 2. She doesn't have a clue what's going on. It's heaped on her so strongly from that age that she never questions that. She thinks she is bad.
Yeah.
She should have known better. She's wronged her mother.
So Jeanette, from a very young age, almost from before she's talking and stuff, just has this understanding that she has to keep her mum happy, she has to please her all the time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of emotional manipulation. Do you know what? Obviously, this whole book, I'm kind of thinking, okay, her mum isn't just an awful monster. Her mum's had some awful things happening and she's dealing with it the best way she can in a small house with 4 children. It's kind of, I didn't want to read the book thinking this woman is just an out-and-out villain. She's kind of not. And actually, Jeanette never really thinks that of her at the time.
No, it's only right at the end of the book
after
when
therapy.
She starts looking back.
Yeah.
And finding out that none of this is normal.
And actually, this book is called I'm Glad My Mum Died.
Mm.
that's not really in the book.
No, it's
She's
not.
Never
it's not
glad
the sentiment
her mum's
she
died.
Has.
I think that the publisher just said this is a really good title that will sell this book.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I also would imagine there are certain times now where she realises she's glad she died, but it's so much more complicated than that. It's a very catchy and clever title and it does the job.
But it doesn't really sum the book
no,
up.
No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all. It gets you in. Yeah. As if it was like, I had a really, really difficult, heavy, guilt-filled childhood. You wouldn't buy it.
You wouldn't buy it.
By the way, I actually found this absolutely fascinating, this book. Absolutely fascinating insight into probably a lot of people's experience.
Oh.
Cannot be isolated. And it will go back to even when Charlie Chaplin's era, where they were pushing the kids forward, there'll be some of them who were crazy mothers.
You know what this reminded me of? It's kind of a flip of Mommy Dearest. Because Mommy Dearest, which we read, which was like our third podcast we ever did, is about a non-famous daughter talking about her very famous mum and the abuse that she endured at the hands of her. This is actually a famous daughter talking about her non-famous mum.
Oh, yeah.
So this book is essentially about a non-famous person. Because every single page is about her mum.
Yeah.
It's just the daughter's observations.
That's true.
Psychologically, it's almost the same, but very quite different.
It is, actually. And then there's similarities with Agassiz, whose dad, literally every kid he tried to make into a tennis star.
Yeah.
Agassiz was the last chance. He drugged them. He strapped tennis back to his hand when he was a baby. I mean, that's
it's abuse.
The same thing. It is very similar behaviour of parents, that they have kids to make them into something, to make them into the thing they weren't. Just that in itself, that concept is scary, really. Or the royals. The royals
well,
do it.
Well, they're born into it, aren't
they? They're born
they?
Into it, but these people are born into it. They've
created
children to be something in advance of them being alive.
Oh, my God.
It's the same as the royals.
This is a human rights issue.
It is. It's a human rights issue. You said that about the royals. It's the same here. It's the same with the royals. It's the same with the Agassiz. It's the same with any parent who just decides the fate of their kid before they're even born.
I actually think as well, this is lots of people's stories who aren't even in the world of entertainment.
Oh, God,
do you know
you're
I mean?
Right.
It's just having that overbearing, manipulative parent.
Yeah.
Emotionally abusive. And
yes, and the thing is, we're saying all this now. This book is 95% this girl doesn't realise all of this was wrong.
Yeah.
She literally doesn't know. She goes through 95% of this book without even questioning any of it. It's quite amazing. Okay, they're Mormons. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. They're Mormons, which means they're very heavily religious as well. So you can put that onto it as well. You've got this faith, you've got that. That's how it should work. This is the rules and how it should be.
But her mum also is tricky with that, in that they all have to go to church and they all have to do this and they all have to be good people. And actually, when her mum is in remission and she doesn't have cancer, they stop going to church.
Yeah.
And when Jeanette questions her, aren't we going to church? Her mum absolutely explodes at her, as if don't ask that question.
Yeah, so she sort of goes, so you only go to church when you want something from God, like you want to be cured. And when you are cured, you don't go anymore because you don't want anything from him. Is that how it's supposed to work?
Mm-hmm.
Thing is, she doesn't question anything outwardly. Like you say, she opens a present she doesn't want and she puts on this fake smile, says, thank you. Oh, I love it. You know, when she's sent to an audition, she goes, yes, I won this part. Everything she does from 2 years onwards is fake. That's the most fascinating thing to me. It's not like she's suffering this terrible abuse. She's just being fake and not being real. And that's the, well, it's just a very strange concept that a kid is being taught to be someone they're not. And then there's someone else inside them they're never allowed to be.
It is like they have no choice. I mean, there's a bit at the beginning of this book where she does everything to keep her mum happy. And then her mum says to her, do you want to act? Do you want to be mummy's little actress? And she says, well, there's only one right answer to that. She has to say yes.
Yeah. And the other thing is, whenever, if she ever says anything out of line, which she mentions about twice, if she says, no, I'd like to be a writer, she said once, I think her mum... The barrage of hysterical behaviour. Mm. It's like absolute scream, bawling tears, hysterical madness, crash the car, madness.
Oh, this is how much of a manipulative old bag she is. I think Jeanette stands up to her in the car once and her mum says, you're going to make me lose control of the car. I'm going to kill us both. So, of course, Jeanette has to stop talking.
Yes. So when you get that sort of reaction, you definitely learn to never... risk it, because it's not worth it. Erratic and violent behaviour. But anyway, it's just to try and describe what we're dealing with here.
Yeah. So her mum tries to get her an acting agent. She's 6 years old and she takes her to do an audition. Her mum also primes her, so nothing is left to Jeanette. So in a way, it's not even Jeanette auditioning. It's like it's her mum's auditioning through Jeanette.
Right.
Her mum did want to be an actress, right? Do you know what? Obviously, I've been in this industry a long time, so I know lots of people who haven't been successful in their acting dreams. And we're at that age now where they're all having kids. I probably shouldn't say this out loud.
Oh, are you terrified some of them will do it to their kids?
They're doing it.
They are.
I mean, I'm not saying that they're manipulating them in the way
this
woman
is. Hopefully not to this extent.
But, I mean, on Facebook, you know, when people have kids, all of a sudden their Facebook feed becomes their kids. Well, at the age of three, they're all dressed up on stage and going to auditions and amateur matches. I'm like, do they want to do that? Or is it them living their dreams vicariously through their children?
I don't know, but there's just a line you don't cross. This, you can't even see that line. That line is in another country. Anyway, back in the audition room.
So she gets put forward for doing extra work. And there are different levels of being an extra, your background or semi-background or principal. And little Jeanette, she doesn't really want to be doing this. And
I guess
she's going in there. And I think the casting directors pick up on that she's quite reluctant and shy.
The director actually comes up to her privately and says, it's really important that you're doing this, that you actually want to do this. And do you mind if I ask you, do you actually want to? Because he can obviously tell.
Yeah.
And she says, yes, I really want to. And she's bloody lying. He knows.
Yeah.
Because they must see pushy mothers.
They
all
must
time.
See
of course,
it,
there's
Lord.
Pushy mothers and absolute nut job mothers. This is beyond that.
Yeah.
Anyway, carry on. We're giving it all away before we've said it.
So, okay, she gets a bit of background work on The X-Files.
Mm.
Classic 90s sci-fi drama. So, well, she's in the right place, isn't she? Mm-hmm. Live in California.
She's in LA, yeah.
She's getting extra work, but quite soon she's working on a short film where she has to play a child who's getting gassed. A
load of kids getting gassed, terrible.
But she can play sad very, very well.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, because she's a bloody depressed child.
Yeah,
let's
she
face
is
it.
Hidden under a facade of sunshine.
And her mum's always saying to her, when you're going to be really jolly, be really happy and make sure everybody sees you. But actually, the reason she first gets picked out is because the director needs a sad child. And he says to the first lady, go and find that girl with the sad face.
Yeah.
And he brings back Jeanette. And so Jeanette gets a close-up shot of her little sad face. Because of that, she moves up a notch. So her mum, actually, I have to say, I wish her mum was my agent because she's really good.
Oh, she's good, yeah, if you want
talking
it.
Talking to people.
Yeah.
Because Jeanette got upgraded for a close-up, she then calls an extras agency and says Jeanette's been chosen for a principal shot, so she now needs to be a principal extra. And so quite soon she's getting other principal extra work and she's being put up for other stuff. She writes her own CV and she says the thing that she's really good at is crying on cue.
That's right.
Which I guess is really valuable for a kid.
Oh, really, really. And any other actors.
Yeah.
But yeah, especially a kid.
And she becomes known in Hollywood circles as the kid who can cry on cue.
She literally just thinks about sad things and she can cry.
And it's really sad, actually, that a little girl can just do that. She's so fucked up already, that mother, honestly.
Yeah.
So she's becoming a popular little background artist, isn't she?
Yeah.
And she's not even like 10 yet.
By the way, her grandparents, her granddad's the ticket taker at Disneyland.
Yeah.
You know, that's a picture of happiness, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, they get a season ticket as a family, don't they? Free.
Yeah. Her grandma works at a retirement home. But also, her dad's, just to give us a bit of background on the family, her dad works in a kitchen design department, sort of Home Depot, and her mother went to beauty school. So it's all about the surface. It's all about facade.
But she says that having babies sidetracked her career.
Yeah. Now she's doing some shifts at Target, but her main job is Jeanette's stardom.
Yeah.
That's her main job. It's her goal in life.
Well, she does it very well.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not doing it the right way, but she makes her daughter a massive star.
Well, I've never heard of her, but yes.
Her grandma actually is a nut as well, isn't she?
Yes.
She's a real emotional manipulator.
Yes, definitely.
Grandma's in the bathroom and the three kids need to get ready for church. So Jeanette knocks on the door and says, Grandma, can you hurry up? Because we need to get ready. And the grandma will open the door and go, why do you hate me so much?
Oh, yeah. The reason I'm absolutely sure that Jeanette's mum is really mentally deranged and unhinged herself is because her mum's definitely also mentally deranged. So she, I can only guess what her childhood was like.
Oh, dear.
And the actual tipping point is that later on she says, and it was after her mum died, she says, my grandma strokes my back. And she only knows how to touch people in a sexual way. Mm. She doesn't know how to touch people in any other way. So at that point, my alarm bells were going, oh, no, her mum might have had some sort of dodgy childhood. And therefore, it's passed on. And therefore, you can't put it all on her.
I do think the way this book is written, I don't think Jeanette even wants us to think it is just all her mum. So she clearly loves her mum.
But I don't think it is. If you're saying that about your gran and the stuff later on when her gran's funny, you don't phone me, you never... Well, they're all damaged people.
Yeah, they are, damaged, aren't they?
Yeah.
What's really weird as well is that Jeanette says... Well, I think her dad is late home from work and she can see that her mum is really fuming. Mm. I can imagine he doesn't want to come home either. Yeah. Jeanette already knows at a very young age that it's going to kick off as soon as dad comes in. So she puts herself in the middle of it. And when dad comes in, she goes up and gives him a big hug, even though he never hugs her.
Never hugs her back, never ruffles her hair, never shows her any affection at all.
And then, because she can see mum tensing, she goes over to mum and says, I love you, mum, blah, blah, blah. But it's not enough. And then she says her mum launches at her dad and starts hitting him. And then when dad pushes her away, mum goes, abuse, abuse, you're abusing me.
Yeah.
But the weird thing is, Jeanette then says that when mum gets up again and starts hitting dad, Jeanette starts cheering her on.
Good grief.
That's weird, isn't it? Mm. That she's trying to stop it from happening. You would assume she hates it. Oh, but then I wonder whether she has to do that to keep her mum happy. She has to be on her mum's side. Mm.
But then partly it's fake, and then the other part of her can't live without her mum, loves her so much she can't... It's that Stockholm syndrome again, isn't it? Where you just absolutely love your captor.
Sometimes as well, the mum has a knife and yells at dad to get out of the house and makes him sleep in the car and stuff. Mm. Oh, and as well, and Jeanette puts this down to the Mormonism, but mum catches dad watching porn one day, which is one of the worst things you can do in Mormonism. From that day, she kicks him out of the house and she says to Jeanette, do not call him dad anymore, call him Mark. And she said that she called him Mark until the day her mum died. Mm. Because mum caught dad watching porn once. That punishment does not fit that crime.
But the bombshell is that after her mum died, we find out he's not actually her real dad.
Are we going to talk about that now?
We kind of might as well, because we know that.
Yeah.
She only finds it out way after her mum died. So it's really, really confusing because then you find out she's not getting affection because that bloke disconnected with her anyway. Was he the father of any of the children?
No.
No, none of them.
No.
This but other then, bloke was. So she'd constantly been having an affair. So was she ever sleeping with him at all?
I don't know, but then you also have to question, if he knew he wasn't their biological dad, which he did.
Yes.
Why did he stay in this crazy situation?
Is it because they're Mormons and you literally can't leave or can't get divorced because then nobody will speak to you?
I don't know.
God knows. It's so messed up. These people are very, very messed up. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, she's getting a good acting career.
Yes. I don't know if this is going to sound depressing to people, but it's just mainly fascinating, honestly.
Oh, I didn't read this book. I didn't get depressed.
I didn't either.
I was fascinated too.
Yes.
Not least because at the age of 8, her mum's still wiping her bottom.
And she does till she is 10.
I mean, that in itself, do you think that little girl thinks that all mums wipe their daughter's bottoms up till that age?
I'm sure she must have noticed that nobody else's mums are going in the toilet.
Okay.
And she said, she actually says she freezes up around showers time because her mum probes her private areas and examines them. And you don't even know what for.
Well, cancer. Here's a thing that I think's been misconstrued. Jeanette says in this book about her mum showers her, but will check her breasts and her vagina, like a medical exam. I think that's because her mum is nuts about cancer and wants to make sure that her daughter doesn't have it. Jeanette does not allude to it being sexual in any way.
She but doesn't.
The press has. And I think that's an unfair assumption. I kind of took it that her mum got cancer young and she's going to make sure her daughter doesn't have it.
Why wiping your ass till you're 10 or breastfeeding till you're 7, including her son and daughter till they're about 7 or 8 or something, saying, I don't want to stop breastfeeding.
Well, do you want to know the most shocking sentence in this book for me?
Yeah.
was that Mum is still showering me. I am 16.
Yes. And she says she literally gets totally frozen up with fear and horrible feeling any time it's around shower time. She can't bear it.
And sometimes she makes her brother shower with her as well.
Yep. I know. You can say it's not sexual, but it has a sexual effect on people.
Oh, okay.
It freezes them over. They're not private. It's not right.
The abuse from a mother might not be intentionally sexual, but as a pubescent girl and boy, of course, it's a sexual experience.
Wiping your ass, I don't know how you can rational that away.
How old were you when your mum stopped wiping?
Stop it. Obviously, stop it. How old were you?
She still does.
Stop it.
Anyway, back to the acting career. So now she gets a better acting agent, Barbara Cameron, whose children are famous actors, not least far-right-wing Christian fundamentalist Kirk Cameron. He wasn't back in the day. Well, he might have been when he was a kid.
Yeah.
A far-right Christian fundamentalists born or created?
Both.
It's another book.
Yes.
But this woman has more welly, and Mom takes Jeanette and Jeanette's brother, Marcus, who she's now also told is going to be an actor. And she takes them both for an audition at Barbara Cameron's house. Barbara Cameron only wants to take on Marcus and doesn't want to take on Jeanette. Mom, of course, is right in there saying, what are you talking about? You don't want to take Jeanette. And she's saying, well, we've got a lot of female talent.
There's girls always more girls,
just want to be. Who was it who went to acting school because there were seven women to the...
Roger Moore.
Was it Roger Moore? Well, I thought it was Patrick Swayze. It's
probably
all of them.
And
basically, Mum says, we'll just take her on for 3 months, and if she doesn't get anything, you can drop her. Basically, Mum's gift of the gab, sales pitch, gets Jeanette on the books of Barbara Cameron. Barbara Cameron is not an extras agency. She's principal actors. Mum is really pleased because Jeanette is no longer in the background.
Her mum feeds her Red Bull before she goes to do a comedy audition because she thinks it makes her funnier.
Probably does.
She talks faster.
Yeah, I drink Red Bull before we do these podcasts. Doesn't work.
So anyway, yeah, she got booked for a speaking role on Mad TV. That was a big deal. And they said, are you happy? And she said, I'm glad mum's happy. That's her angle on it.
Yeah.
And then at some point they said she needs to dance. So she signed her up for 14 dance classes a week.
It's a lot, isn't it?
You know. And then a big break. She's got Malcolm in the Middle as a guest star role. That's a big deal.
Yeah, because I've heard of Malcolm.
I've actually heard of that, yeah.
But it's around this time that she starts getting the voices in her head right. Her internal monologue is taking over.
Oh, yeah, because in her Mormon religion, every child is supposed to, at some point, start to hear the voice of God speaking to them. That's normal. That's told them that they will hear it. And she clearly suddenly hears this voice that tells her what to do.
It says if she's going for an audition, she has to cross her name out of the sign-in sheet, go to the restroom, touch her underwear band 5 times, twirl on 1 foot, unlock and relock the bathroom door 5 times, come back and re-sign in on the sheet.
Yeah.
That's God telling her to
do
that.
And the voice clearly told her, the voice of God. And she was so relieved that God was finally talking to her, completely OCD, anxiety-driven madness, for years, until one day she realised it was the voice in her own head and it was her anxiety and OCD voice talking to her, not God at all. Took her years to find that out. She did everything he said, this voice.
All these weird little rituals to get her auditions and stuff.
So it was basically from that moment on, she started losing it.
Yeah, she's only like 8 or 9 at this point.
You know, this is like being in a cult of one, with one cult leader and one member of the cult.
With an occasional member who's your brother who comes and goes.
A little extra member,
yeah.
It is.
Her mum as well is doing things like dyeing her eyelashes, which for like a 9-year-old girl. Again, this is just like you said at the beginning. This is just an eye-opener into the industry. Because I read recently, I don't know how you say this, Jojo Siwa, who's another kind of like Disney child star. Yeah. She's like 18 or something now. Her mum admits that she used to dye her hair blonde at the age of 2.
Whoa.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember watching, I can't remember if it was this documentary a few years ago called Star Suckers, where they set up these auditions for children. Oh, or was it even Bruno, you know, the Sacha Baron Cohen film? They were bringing in children, like young children, and then saying to the mother with a two-year-old girl, oh, you know, she's a bit chubby. We might have to, like, suck some of the fat out of her. And the mum, but yeah, whatever it takes. It was terrifying. And then this other mum, they said to, like, this eight-year-old girl, she might have to have some Botox. The mum actually said, oh, I already give it to her.
Oh, my God.
And she said it's because it just freshens her up a bit.
Okay, so there's loads of these crazy women out there.
There are loads of these crazy women. I think we're hearing about Jeanette McCurdy because she became massively famous.
Apparently.
In her sphere. But actually,
possibly this book made her even more famous because it's a really good and well-written book. It's really good.
Oh, yeah, and she's funny. It's funny, right?
It's a really good book.
I think it's pitched so perfectly because the content is so utterly depressing.
Yeah, and
but somehow the book never gets
depressing. No, it doesn't. Yeah. Right, what happens next? She gets a few things. She gets a commercial. Princess Paradise Park, the studio film. She gets signed with a manager.
Is this Susan? Within a week, she gets a really bad fever, a temperature of 103. She gets an audition and mum makes her do it because they've just signed with Susan. And she says, if she doesn't, it will look bad. So this poor girl can't even be ill.
She got a job as a murderer's sister on CSI. And every time she played a part like this, the Mormon religious group that they're part of, like, shunned her because you're playing a murderer's sister and you're not allowed to murder. You know, it's all that stuff was going on as well.
You know, she does actually say at one point, she says to her mum, I don't want to act anymore. I mean, she didn't want to act anyway.
Ever. No, but her mum didn't know that.
Well, she didn't give her a chance.
Oh, yeah. No.
But when she says to her mum, I don't want to act anymore, she says, don't be silly. You love acting. It's your favourite thing in the world. Mm. It's brainwashing. It's gaslighting, isn't it?
And her grandpa's the only one who breaks through it. He looks at her and he says, you deserve to be a kid.
Yeah.
You know, kids should have fun.
That's the thing, right, about this whole... I almost think it should be illegal for any kids to work. And because this is work, right?
Yeah,
people think because it's showbiz and it's dancing and singing and acting and they're having fun. If anybody's ever been on a film set or a TV set, it's really hard work. It's discipline, it's structure, it's keeping bloody quiet until it's your turn.
Yeah.
None of that is really natural for a child. The 2 seconds when they might be on camera is the fun bit. Actually, everything else is really hard work. It's exhausting. Like, if you don't think it's right for a child to go and work in a shop or any other job on a building
and
site.
And you're talking 6-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you don't think it's right for a child to do that kind of work, then it's not actually right for a child to be on a film set. And I know we have laws now and, you know, that they can only work certain hours. It's still too much.
It's weird, though. You get the likes of Drew Barrymore on the set of E.T. and she's having the time of her life.
It worked out so well for her, didn't it?
But they had a tutor on set. She had other kids with her. But, you know,
I think she's a bad example. She became emancipated from her mother at the age of 14.
Oh, yeah, she was in Studio 54 with her mother. Okay.
No.
The way she describes the E.T. experience was magical, but then she became massively famous. It totally messed her up.
But she did think E.T. was real.
Yeah, she was talking to him in the lunch break. Yeah. Anyway, she says when her grandpa says that kids should have fun, her eyes watered up for real, and she'd forgotten what that feels like, to have real feelings.
That's really sad.
Mm.
She started writing a screenplay at like the age of what?
Yeah.
10, 11?
She's about 10, 11, and she was taking it around, showing it to people and stuff like that, apart from her mum flipped when she knew about it.
Well, that's quite amazing that this young girl is writing like that.
And that's why this book's so good. She really is a writer.
Yeah, she really is. But her mum said to her, you can't be a writer, you're an actor. So she just wants to keep her mum happy. So therefore, this brainwashing and stuff that her mum does, she now knows that writing makes her mum unhappy, but acting makes her happy. So she's just going to keep acting, even though she doesn't want to.
No. On a side note, when her mum's happy, she sings Phil Collins.
So do you. You have something in common. It's a good job you never had children.
All right, so she suddenly hits tween, soon as she's about 11, and she realises that her breasts are growing, and she's like, Mum, what are we going to do? Because I need to play kids. She knows she's supposed to remain a kid, and she's horrified. So her mum says, don't worry, I know what we do. We put you on a calorie-restrictive diet. So she immediately, basically, becomes what is known as an anorexic. She doesn't know that word and has no idea that's what's happening to her. So she basically eats very, very little, a bit of lettuce. It's just nothing.
She says her mum puts her on 1,000 calories a day, but she works out quickly that if she only eats half of the food on her plate, well, actually, she's only getting 500 calories a day, which means she'll lose weight even faster. Yeah. And when she shows her mum the plate to see that she's only eaten half her food, she says that her mum beams.
Yeah.
So she's just reinforcing her own daughter's anorexia.
Absolutely. She weighs her 5 times a day. But it's that obsessive compulsive behaviour.
Yeah.
But her mum's also dieting as well. And she says it brings them closer. The more they don't eat together, the closer they get.
But the doctors notice Jeanette's losing weight, and they know that her weight is significantly lower than what's normal for her age.
Yeah, and the doctor says, your daughter's anorexic, and she claims ignorance. And she's witnessing this. She hears her mum go, what? She can't be anorexic. She eats full meals, she does. And that's her first clue that something's off, because she, up to that point, doesn't know there's anything wrong with what they're doing. So if her mum's lying and covering it up, it's a little clue. Yep. Why are you covering this up?
And she says that when she's at dance class, one of the mums, because her mum would come late to pick Jeanette up when all the other mums had gone. And she said one day one of the mums stayed behind to talk to her mum. And she said, I'm very worried that Jeanette's anorexic. On the way home, Jeanette says to her mum, what's anorexia? And she says, don't worry about it. People are just being dramatic. And then they don't talk about it again. So you're right, she's getting little slivers of information from the outside
world. Of the cult of two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, this poor girl.
So she's 14, still sitting in a booster seat.
Yeah,
in
the car. That's fucking weird.
Well, that's actually probably about the point where I Googled her height, because she's actually very small. Anyway, but small and skinny, obviously. But that's when she gets given a series regular role in iCarly.
Now, this is where I have to admit I've never heard of this. Actually, no, I had heard of it.
Had you? I hadn't.
But I just knew that it was some kind of children's show in America. Oh, right. On Nickelodeon, right? In fact,
well, yeah.
I may have heard about it because of the guy who got done for being inappropriate around children, which we'll get to.
Yes, he's coming up. It's a series regular role, so it's on telly and it's regular work, and she'll get some money and get recognised. And her first thought is, mum will finally be happy now. Her dream has come true.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, her co-star is Miranda Corgrove, and she seemed so cool and independent and was listening to Avril Lavigne and added her on this chat thing so they could talk all the time, and it seemed like a lifeline. She had a real friend, and that friendship continued for years. They finally sort of drifted apart because they'd just gone different directions, but a really good positive thing in this book, that friendship.
I thought about that, and I think they bonded purely because they were talking via an app.
Yeah.
So mum wasn't privy to it. She kind of said, Jeanette said they didn't really talk when they were on set.
Yep.
But when they got home, they would message each other on the app. And Jeanette said that if her mum come into the room, she'd close the app down and say, I'm doing homework. So she's actually finally has somebody to talk to, kind of almost in secret.
Yeah.
Without her mum breathing down her neck. Yeah, it's a really valuable friendship, isn't it?
Yeah. Definitely. So, yeah, they've got financial stability now. She was on that show for 3 years. And she talks about this bloke and she only refers to him as the creator.
His name is Dan Schneider.
Yeah, let's out him.
Well, he's been outed anyway.
He's outed. I know, but for ages reading this book, it's the creator. So I thought, okay, who is this and why is she referring to him like that? So I Googled it and found out. Dan Schneider, and he is dodgy with young people. And he got kicked off this show for being
dodgy.
Wow,
do you know what's weird?
Just put him in the back room or something. Yeah.
I find it so weird that they didn't, on the day that these allegations happened, they didn't say, okay, you're sacked and get somebody else in. They put him in another room with monitors.
Yeah, an isolated room so he could safely conduct the show from a room where he couldn't touch anyone.
I mean, that's bizarre.
I think he's probably really unemployed now when it's all properly come out.
Yeah. He's very controlling. I mean, he's a much older man. She's a child still, let's face it. She certainly looks like
one. He's making her drink wine as well. And he's sort of saying, don't you really want this? That you want your own spin-off show?
Yeah, he's
it's all in the air. I reckon if he had a chance, he'd have gone further with her.
But at the same time, like her mum, she also knows she has to keep him happy because he's basically in control of her career.
So actually, at this point, she's totally professional at pleasing people without... Yeah.
And also, she's seen him being really mean. Like, she's seen him fire a six-year-old who couldn't remember his lines, and he wasn't nice about it.
No.
So he's a real terror, actually. Mm. And the fact that he's taking her aside and letting her drink beer or whatever and saying, oh, I'll give you your own spin-off show one day. Mm. Not yet, in 2 years' time, you know, if you're good
if
to
you're
me.
If you're good, yeah, exactly.
He's a real
Isn't that
creep.
What you want, your own show? And of course she's saying, yes, I do, but actually she doesn't.
No, she doesn't.
So she won't do anything to get that because she doesn't want it. That's probably her saved her.
Yeah, right.
Bloody hell. Yeah, she's now famous and she's got whole new levels of stress.
We know now from reading these books that she's on a hit show in people's front rooms. Her fame is exponential at this point. Her fame is a product of something she didn't want to do. She didn't ask for it. She can't even leave the house now without getting mobbed or people shouting stuff at her, people wanting a photo.
Oh, she really gets mobbed, doesn't she?
Yeah. This is a byproduct of something she didn't want to do. At least a lot of these books we read, people actually want to be famous.
That's right.
So they have to put up with it.
Yeah, she only has to please her mum. She doesn't give a shit about pleasing her audience because she doesn't want the job. And it makes you think, God, if you ever see some moody star, you have no clue what they're going through. You have no clue. You have no right to judge them for not wanting to talk to you because you don't know what's going on with them.
Yeah.
They're not the person in the show. They are a whole other person.
Of course, yeah.
You don't know them.
Their mum might still be showering them.
Yeah, her mum was shaving her legs and still showering her when she's 16. That's not for cancer. You're insane.
What? No, I think that's weird.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I know
not
this
you're
is
insane.
Probably.
I was talking to her
mom. I think this is probably really sexist of me. I think because it's a mother and a daughter, I don't know, it just doesn't read as sexual to me. This is how naive I am.
But like I say, it's not necessarily sexual, but it has terrible sexual knock-on effects.
Yeah.
Naked is a total invasion.
Oh, a 16-year-old girl definitely needs privacy in the shower.
Yeah,
she just does.
Yeah. They set her up with a bit of a songwriting career, singer-songwriting.
So they're going to groom her now as a country Nashville singer.
Yeah, so she actually goes to Nashville and spends time apart from her mum. So they'd only spent a few hours apart in 18 years. Starts eating, but of course she has massive guilt when she eats. She feels bitterness towards her mother and then feels massively guilty about that. She's totally conflicted. She's totally messed up. This is the worst podcast ever. I wouldn't listen to this.
But while she's away, so this is another awful thing. So she's away for the first time in her life. She's 18. She's in another state. She's making music. She's actually hanging out with people her own age. And yeah, okay, she's eating properly. Then she finds out that her mum's cancer has come back.
I know, she actually had a chance of evolving at that point. If her mum's cancer hadn't come back, she might have got through this and been okay.
But she stays out because obviously she has a record to promote and there's money invested in her. And she goes on tour because of her fame from the TV show. She's actually doing quite big concerts and stuff. And she's on a tour bus and she's going round. And I think she's just kind of having a bit of freedom at last, you know.
I reckon you're right.
But she does get very, very nervous about performing because, again, I don't think she really quite wants to do this.
No, I don't think she does.
So even though she doesn't have her mum with her at the moment, she's got herself into another performing situation.
Yeah, she has. But she actually like has her first kiss with the guitarist and, you know, has a drink. And it's like sort of experimenting with being a person who's free.
But she says because she's just been out being free and eating what she wants, she says, I'm terrified of mum seeing me. But actually, when they come and meet her at the airport, she forgets all that immediately because her mum looks terrible because the cancer's come back. And she said mum never prepared her for how she looked. And I think that's manipulation in itself, isn't it? She's shocked at how ill her mum looks. And then her mum just says to her, you're getting chunky. You need to get back on a diet.
But then she's like, oh, phew, my mum's going to be okay because she's the same old mother.
Same old mother.
Bloody hell. But yeah, she's got this boyfriend. She has to keep it quiet because her mum would go mad. And then they end up getting paparazzied on a little holiday in Hawaii that she's totally lied about. Her mum goes the maddest she's ever been, and she said there's evil messages on her phone, stuff like "you gave me cancer." Yeah. I mean, the worst messages. Then her mum gets onto Jeanette's fan site and posts messages like that about her on her fan site.
As her mother.
As her mother.
Yeah, she's not doing it anonymously.
Absolutely full on.
Yeah,
crazy
she says
stuff.
She doesn't deserve you as fans.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a crazy woman.
Oh, yeah, totally. I can't believe we started this going. Do you think she's crazy? No, yeah, she's totally. Anyway, she also decides she wants Jeanette to sing "Wind Beneath My Wings" at her funeral.
Well, she kind of almost rehearses her to do it.
Yeah.
She makes her do it time and time again, and Jeanette doesn't want to do it. It's in the wrong key.
It's in the wrong key. She can't even sing it.
She's basically this woman that is this narcissistic woman to the very last day of her life, is orchestrating everything and now guilt tripping her own daughter to sing under duress at her funeral. Yeah, the whole thing is
crazy. God, now she's got a brain tumour as well. Anyway, iCarly ends and they start the spin-off series, which is called Sam and Cat, which ran between 2013 and 2014. This is what I didn't know.
Her Ariana Grande.
Yeah, sorry. You're spoiled.
Oh, say it.
No, you can say it.
Say it.
Her co-star in that.
Ariana Grande.
No!
No, go on, say
no,
it.
That's funny.
No, do it one
that's
more time. It'll be funny if you do it one more time.
Her co-star in Sam and Cat is...
Ariana Grande.
Stole my punchline. I did not even know that Ariana Grande was anything other than just a singer.
Oh, really?
I didn't even know she was an actor. I didn't know she was co-starring with this other woman I've never heard of. I knew nothing about her. The first time I heard of her is when she did that concert and the terrorist bomb went off. That's the first time I ever heard of her, so I just didn't know anything about that. She literally says, I actually could say that I was jealous of her because she... always coming back onto the set, going, no, I've just done this concert.
Yeah, but she wasn't jealous because she was doing the concert. She was jealous because they were letting her have time off to do the concert.
Partly she was jealous because they were letting her have time off. And the other thing was, oh, I've just done this and I was just playing charades last night with Tom Hanks. He's a fucking national treasure and you were playing charades. She was actually just playing jealous as well.
But she also said that they would never let her have time off.
Yes.
Because she had a couple of movies gave her a contract, but she was filming this show. The thing is with Ariana Grande, because she was just going rehearsals for a concert, she would have to have a day off here and there, whereas Jeanette was asking for a week off.
Yeah.
But then when Ariana Grande wanted a week off, they wrote in the script that her character was trapped in a box.
So she had to talk to a box
so
for the whole week.
So she had to act with a box for a weekend.
She was livid.
Ariana, yes, I would be. Ariana Grande gets a week off, but she has to act with a box.
It's not fair.
It's actually not fair.
It's not fair.
I know, I uphold this. It's not fair.
I'm glad that she wrote this book and it elevated her and now she can have a career as a writer. Otherwise, it'd just be plain unfair.
Yes.
Oh, anyway, her mum actually dies. Her mum actually dies. And that just made her full... on bulimic after her mum died. Really, she tried to be bulimic. She tried to make herself throw up and it had just hurt her throat and she'd failed. But this time she tried harder and discovered she could make herself throw up. Her mum had such a hold on her for such a long time beyond her being alive. Wow.
So after this show with Ariana Grande, she doesn't want to do it because she never wanted to do any of this acting stuff. So when the spin-off happens, they basically talk her into doing it because they promise her that she can direct one of the episodes because she wants to go behind the camera.
Yeah.
So she agrees to do the series. And then when it comes to the time for her to direct her episode, they go in for the table read and her name's taken off the sheet. And she's like, no, hang on a minute. You said I could direct. And they said, oh, can we talk about this later? She's like, no. The only reason I agreed to do this season was because you said I could direct. And they said, we're really sorry, but somebody else who works on the show said in no uncertain terms that if you were allowed to direct an episode, they would quit immediately. Now, she doesn't name who that is, right? If it was the creator, she would say, because...
I thought it was Ariana Grande.
I thought it was Ariana Grande. Why would she do that, though?
Jealous?
No, but Ariana Grande is getting to go off and do what she wants to do.
Yeah, but if she's jealous, as she admits to being, she was probably a total bitch to Ariana Grande.
Oh, okay.
I bet she was.
Do you think so?
Yeah, because she was a bitch to everybody because she was a very upset messed up person. She bits all her fans. She admits it. I bet she was a cow around this time. She hadn't had any therapy yet.
Yeah, right.
She was very angry. Her mum died.
She's
not
being
eating.
Oh, she passed out on set one day.
I bet she was a nightmare.
She's high stress.
And so Ariana Grande
she?
Does not want to be directed by her.
Right.
She'd have power over her. At that point. You wouldn't, would you?
She'd put her in a box while she was actually, while she was actually there.
Yes. Well, that's what I. It makes sense. I reckon she was a nightmare.
Okay, all right, yeah, you've made sense of that situation. Mm. Anyway, it kind of doesn't go on a lot longer. Her agents call her up and say the show's been cancelled.
Yeah.
And then they say, oh, you're being paid $300,000. And she's like, that's a lot of money.
Mm. And they say it was to hush her up, basically hush money, because there'd been sexual harassment claims made against Dan Schneider. And if she took that money, she had to sign something to say she would never talk about Nickelodeon or the creator. She went, no way. And at that time, she could have really done with that money. Yeah. But she said no. And now she's written a book. She must have made loads of money for it and put this important stuff in it that needs saying.
Oh, yeah, right. Because if she'd taken that money,
she couldn't have even written about that in this book. And she would have taken her power away. Oh, God, you know, this gets me. Cause at this point, you know, she's very successful. She's just quit a second show that she's the star of. She goes to a bar with her friends for her birthday, and they get out a cake. She goes, oh, please don't get out a cake. With her friends, this is. Because she can't eat cake. Well, she can. She'll have to throw it up. So, oh, no. So she blows the candles out and asks, oh, thank you. Happy birthday. Thank you. I'm so happy. And then she eats a piece of the cake and has to go and throw it up. Oh, lovely cake. Goes. You think, you're never being real. You can't be real in front of even your friends. That's the saddest thing, always being fake. This woman needs to be real.
She's becoming an adult now, isn't she?
Yeah, she's just
so her
full
whole
of secrets.
Entire childhood has been a fake persona.
And now she's a fake adult. Yeah, anyway, she goes to see this counsellor and they're getting on quite well, a therapist. But Laura is actually getting somewhere. At some point when she's telling the therapist about her dieting and her mum's starving of her, basically, she says, that's abuse. That's like such a turning point. At that point, when she says those words, she cuts all ties with her. And that's because she's pinpointed the truth. No one wants to hear the truth.
Yeah.
And it took her a really long time to get another therapist and brave sort of facing that truth again. But that's the moment it starts.
It was very interesting because we've read this book. We know that it is abuse. And we know that Jeanette knows that now. So actually, when this conversation with the therapist started, I had to read it a couple of times because she was like saying to her, oh, but your mum basically taught you anorexia.
Yeah.
And she said, yeah, but that was her way of helping me.
Yeah.
And she said, well, in what way did it actually help you?
Yeah.
She didn't make the connection in her head.
That she's destroyed her mental health and physical health because her teeth are dropping out at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so unhealthy if you're not getting proper nutrition. Well, of course, you can actually die.
Yeah.
This is horrific.
It was surprising to read. And that made the whole thing so believable that all throughout that she thought her mum was just doing it out of love.
Yeah.
And it was hard for her to be told it was abuse, to the point that when she was told, she kind of didn't want to hear it
and
anymore.
Shut it down, really shut it down. I mean, there's some boyfriend stuff in her as well, but that's all pretty messed up. She's clearly finding other people that are similarly troubled, including a boyfriend who decides he's the next Jesus.
That was a shocker because I actually thought, because she's off filming this new Netflix thing and she meets this handsome Italian guy. Turns out to be a schizophrenic.
Yeah.
He thinks he's Jesus coming back. I mean, fucking hell, this poor woman.
I think like attracts like, you know, on a level you can see that somebody's damaged and they can see it in you and you want to help each other.
And also she has been indisputably groomed to be a people pleaser. And I do think that abusers and narcissists or whatever can recognise that in someone and probably latch onto them. And do you know what? I love the young woman who wrote this book and I just hope she's okay now. Mm. And I don't know if she is. She seemed all right when I saw her talking on the chat shows. Yeah, she really did. I mean, how do you survive this when your whole entire, not just your formative years, but the first 18. I mean, she was 21 when her mum died.
Mm.
So actually, it's her whole.
It's a big,
extended
huge period
childhood.
Of time. And, you know, not that long after, maybe, I don't know, a year or so after that first chink of her saying that that's abuse, she gets another therapist and they steadily, slowly, and surely get her through everything. and reprogram her mind, but she said it's going to always be a lifelong struggle. But she gets well and basically writes this book. I think that's the next thing she does. She's quite young still. Yeah, you do. You just absolutely root for it. This is just a normal person in normal America. It's experience of life right in front of everyone's eyes.
Yeah.
You know, nobody has stopped it. Nobody's recognised it. And that's how important it is to get these stories out there. Because it's happening right in front of you. You can't blame anyone. It's just really great that you get this story out so that people can be more aware that it's happening and how messed up people can be. And just keep an eye on everybody.
You know, this started off as a one-woman show, but COVID happened. And so it became a book.
Really?
Yeah, she did two shows before they got shut down.
Oh, my God. That's interesting.
It is interesting because she doesn't really want to perform.
She doesn't want to be an actress. She wants to be a writer. I think she could write brilliant screenplays. Actually, this would make a great film, but then you'd have to cast a kid. Yeah. It should be a problem.
No, you would just have to get an anorexic 16-year-old.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's an interesting point. I understand the need for a person who has great success of being a child. They grow out of it. It's like in the musicals, in the theatre, they literally have, when the boy gets to be like 13.
Oh, yeah, they're out.
They literally have another younger boy waiting in the wings. And who was it? It was Phil Collins. Halfway through the production of Oliver, his voice broke. He was literally off stage in that song and they brought the understudy on who was younger.
Oh, they're brutal. It's brutal for kids.
Oh, Phil.
Yeah, but he became Phil.
He did become Phil.
Yeah. And she's become a great writer.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really going to watch this space. Having never heard of her, I'm really going to follow her career. I'm never going to bother her in public, but I'm definitely going to root for her and hope she does well. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Thrift Shop Biography. We love making this podcast and we're absolutely thrilled that so many of you are already listening. You could really help us out by leaving us a review somewhere, wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you could share us, tell your friends about us or drop some links on social media. We have a Facebook page called Thrift Shop Biography. So make sure you come over there to hear about the episodes first and what else we're up to. Okay, see you next week. And if you're new here, there are loads more episodes now to go and listen in the back catalogue. So make sure you go and enjoy them. Okay, thank you very much.